Nintendo has introduced a new way to share games digitally with your immediate family. Plus, Sony is preserving their history in a secretive vault on tape backup. Tonight is March 30th, 2025, at the Bobby Blackwell Show, featuring your calls and chat comments, is up next. So you would say, even if... Okay, I'll let you go. You talk. Wow, what happened to your voice? Thank you, Skype. So video games, that's what the show is about.
This is that one Akia Ripper from Sweden.
And what's with all the Halo hate, Bob? You've been hating on Halo a lot lately.
I just don't like shooters. I'm not saying it's a bad game, I just don't like it. Billy O.K. says he can't be seen in public playing games that aren't hardcore. What would people say? And what up, G and Chad is once again talking about wrestling. That's why it's not because they hate the fans, it's more because they have to start from scratch.
Hogwash later.
From a little room in Atlanta, Georgia, Bobby Blackwolf.
Last weekend to speculate on Switch 2 stuff. Oh no. They're going to be speculating about it quite some time. After it comes out, they're going to speculate. It never ends. Hello, everybody, and welcome to a no speculating edition of the Bobby Blackwell Show, where we discuss the current news affecting the video game industry. As I was sometimes reminiscing about gaming's history, my name is Bobby Blackwell. If you're joining us live here on the Voice of Geeks Network Twitch channel, welcome. Thank you so much for being here. We do try to tape the show live just about each and every Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, over at the Voice of Geeks Network Twitch channel, twitch.tv/VogNetwork. Come join us live, interact with the show, and I'll be trying to read intelligent comments from chat throughout the night. But I also understand this is a podcast, and so you can talk back to us on our Discord server, vognetwork.com/discord, to get into that server and suggest things and speculate about Switch 2, even though I won't. And, you know, to also, before we get into to everything, I do want to say that happy pollen season to all of my friends here in the Southeast. Lovely shade of yellow everywhere down here. And, you know, as Jared and Matt says, I'm still getting snow. Oh, we're getting snow down here. It's just the yellow snow. And it's been pretty bad. Hopefully people have been taking their allergy medicine because, there's this thing called the pollen count. And I'm here in Atlanta in the Southeast. And there's this thing called the pollen count. And anything over 100 is extreme. And yesterday, the pollen count was 14,000, which is the highest it has been since 2012. Today was 11,000, which means this is the most pollinated weekend. The trees are just having so much fun in 35 years. So it's pretty bad, but it's the next 3 weeks. It's going to be, everything's going to be yellow. We'll actually have yellow submarines. Because we have all that submarines in our landlocked city of Atlanta. It's pretty bad. So now it's, is it an infectious disease or is it pollen? That's the game we all get to play whenever someone sneezes anywhere around us for the next 3 weeks. Yes, Mike Def says spring is in the air, literally. Yes. Tire Claw says don't go outside if you are allergic. Unfortunately, you sometimes do have to. Now, I will say N95 masks work pretty good against pollen. It doesn't get rid of all of it, but it gets rid of a good amount of it. So you may want to find some of those and put those on just to get a little bit of less pollen in your nose. Anyway, Pop Culture says, are you a zombie or are you on Benadryl? Anyway, this is not a pollen thing. I was out in it today, and so I had to think, you know, and my driveway is nice and yellow, and it's, yeah. Anyway, so there was a surprise Nintendo Direct this week about the Nintendo Switch, and nothing, and they even had to say nothing about the Switch 2, and people were still disappointed that they didn't see anything about the Switch 2, even though they said, we're not going to talk about the Switch 2, we're talking about the Switch 2 on April 2nd, but they showed a lot of games that are coming out for the Switch, so they're not abandoning the Switch. You know, some of these are probably going to get Switch 2 editions, which they did actually say was a thing in some other article I was reading when I was trying to put everything together tonight. But what they did want to bring up that I wanted to talk about was a way to handle having multiple systems, because the Switch is one of the few consoles where it is actually pretty common for a household or even a person to have multiple versions of it, multiple iterations. A lot of people, even if they don't have a family that they're with, if it's just them, will have a Switch and a Switch Lite. And, you know, or they'll have the Switch and then the Switch OLED. And with the Switch 2 coming out that is backwards compatible with the Switch 1, that's now going to add yet another console to the family. And even here, like at my house, like it is the one console we have two of because my wife has her own Switch and I have my Switch. So a lot of people have their own Nintendo Switch, and the Nintendo Switch is also used differently than your PlayStation, your Xbox, simply because it is also a portable system. So Nintendo came up with a way to handle somebody who has multiple Switches and uses it primarily as a handheld device. If you don't use it as a handheld device, you're always at home, it's always docked, and it's always on your internet, this isn't for you. And we'll actually talk about how, yes, the way that you've been able to do it so far works just fine. You can opt out of this new system and use the old system now. And Zenmonk11 said, yes, explain. So that segment had me lost. So I'm going to try. I'm basically going to read what they said, and then I'm going to really try to explain it, because it took me a second to get it, and then I was like, oh, okay, that makes sense. So they're called virtual game cards. So Ars Technica reports that Switch players who buy their games on physical cards are used to being able to share those games with other players simply by just handing them the card. Now Nintendo is planning a process to allow players to share their digital Switch purchases in a similar way. The new virtual game card system, which is coming out in late April, will allow players to load and eject digital games via a dedicated management screen. An ejected digital game cannot be played on the original console, but it can be digitally loaded onto a new console and played there without restriction by any user logged into that system. An internet connection is required when loading or ejecting digital games. The internet will not be required to play the shared digital game after that initial process is complete. And while both Switch consoles will need to be synced up via a local connection the first time such sharing is done, subsequent shares will not require the consoles to be in physical proximity. So Nintendo's announcement says that this system will allow players to, quote, freely load and arrange which games you play on up to two systems. Two systems. So if you have three, unquote, suggesting you won't be able to share different games across more than just one secondary console. For households with more than two Switch units, though, Nintendo says virtual game card lending will be available across your Nintendo Switch family group accounts, but those family loans are limited to one game at a time. So I'm going to kind of stop reading this verbatim, and I'm going to explain what's going or what they're trying to do and the problem that they're trying to solve. If your Switch is always docked and you never move and you never leave your house, this is not for you. You don't have to worry about this. So, right now, the way that it works, if you have multiple Switch systems, this is how it works today. And I do actually have a confirmation. Patrick Klepek got confirmation from Nintendo is that you can still do. That still exists, and you're going to be able to opt into it, or I'll opt out of this new system, and you get the old way. They're not taking away the old way. So, when you have multiple Nintendo Switch systems, one of them is your primary console, okay? And when an Xbox and PlayStation have this exact same thing. With the primary and other consoles. So if let's say you have an OG Switch and a Switch Lite, okay? Your OG Switch, you would say, that is my primary console. And your Switch Lite is not your primary console, but your account is logged into it. Any digital purchases you make, you can play them at any time on whatever console you set your primary console to be. So if you are on a plane, you can play them. If you are in your home, you can play them. Your Switch Lite or your secondary Switch that is not your primary console, you can play any game in your digital library as long as you have an active connection to the internet, which means if you are on the plane with your Switch Lite, too bad, so sad, you can't play any of your digital games because the Switch Lite is not your primary console. So in this case, you'd actually want your Switch Lite to be listed as your primary console and the one that you keep at home, your regular Switch, as your secondary, because it's always going to be online. So that is the way it works now. What this system is doing, and what they want to do, is instead of having your console be the primary console for your account, you can set on a game-by-game basis which console is the primary console for that game. So that way, if you have a Switch and a Switch Lite, you can say, well, this game I'm going to play on my Switch Lite on the plane, and this game I'm going to keep on my primary console. Where a lot of people use this is, instead of having the family plan, what they will do is, like, what I theoretically could do with my wife is I'm going to use Animal Crossing, okay? I bought Animal Crossing digitally, which I actually didn't. I bought it physically, but work with me here. This is a hypothetical situation. I bought Animal Crossing digitally. I can play it on my heart. I can play it on my account, right? I can play it on my primary console. If my wife wanted to play Animal Crossing and I didn't buy it physically, she couldn't. But what we could do is I could put my account on her Switch, make her Switch my primary console, which means her account can now play Animal Crossing, and I would be restricted to only playing Animal Crossing when I have a active internet connection on my console. So that would also mean that we could both play Animal Crossing at the exact same time, and we can play online and all that stuff. What this does is it gets rid of that. If you opt in, you can opt out and that it will still work that way. Nintendo has clarified that to other people. So what this would do is I could say, you know, oh, this other console that has my account on it, I can lend Animal Crossing to that account. Now, what that means, though, is I can no longer play it. It turns it into a virtual game card. And so that physical game card is now in, or that virtual game card is now, it's like it's a physical card that was inserted into the other system, which means we couldn't play it at the same time. That's how that works. So it's transferring it between consoles that you have your account on. You can say which game is the primary, or which console is the primary console for this game. So anybody on that console can use it without connecting to the internet. Now, they also included, for people with the family plan, the ability to lend out one single game to a member of your family for 14 days. So, and you can only lend one at a time. And after 14 days, it reverts back to you. So theoretically, because I do have the family plan and my wife and I are on the same family plan, when we have a local connection, so if you have a family all around the world, this ain't going to work for you. But if you're on the same family plan and you have a local connection, so you are within the near field communication of the Switches, I could lend Animal Crossing to my wife. She would be able to play it locally without being connected to the internet for 14 days. Then it reverts back to me, and then we could probably do the reshare again after that. But then I would not have Animal Crossing. I literally could not play Animal Crossing for 14 days. It's as if the physical game was no longer with me and I had handed it to my wife and she has it now. What they haven't said is if this also works for... They have not actually verified and claimed that this will work on every game, because I would love, like, I love Picross, and my wife actually loves Picross. I would love to be able to lend her my digital version of a Picross game I had already completed on Switch. She's actually really interested in Murder by Numbers, which is a Picross game, visual novel, 90s era murder mystery with the same music that did Ace Attorney. It's great. I love the game. But I have it on Switch digitally, and I would be able to loan it to her through this so she could play it, and I'm not playing anymore. So it doesn't matter that I can't play it because I've already beaten it, or I could lend her Balatro, perhaps. But that this is a way to do that. And you can't do that now unless I made her Switch my primary, which meant when I traveled, I wouldn't be able to play any of my games because it's not my primary console. So that is what they are trying to solve here. And not everybody uses the Switch in the way that makes virtual game cards make sense. If the only time you ever play your Switch is docked in your house, and you only have, you know, the one Switch, and you don't have any family members, this is nothing for you. This doesn't do anything for you at all, and it doesn't matter. Or if you are somebody that just has a Switch and you're going to have a Switch 2, and you know what you can do, let's say your Switch 2 is never leaving the house, and your Switch might become a console that you know travels with you or something. Or the other way around, you make whichever one that's traveling with you is your permanent console or is your primary console, and you can play your entire library on it. And then the other one that's always at home, you're fine. And because it's just your account. So it is a little convoluted, but I see the problem that they were trying to solve. And I don't know if there's a simpler way of solving this problem. So, and Rob Roberts says, oh, I thought it would work if I visited a friend, just like handing them a cartridge. This could have been ahead of its time. And it's a new way of digital rights management. That's all this is. It's a new way that they're implementing DRM. And it is like handing a cartridge if they're on your family account. If you have the Nintendo Switch Online family pack, which I do have, and you are within, you know, a local connection with them, which who knows, hackers are going to hack. Maybe they'll be able to spoof it. I don't know. You could lend them a game for 14 days, and then it automatically comes back to you like a library thing, a digital library thing. But it's not as robust as we'd probably wish it was, but I don't know, I don't know how legally in terms of their lawyers, not against the law, but like how they would actually, you know, not have it be a way for piracy to spread if they did it this way or something, you know. And Mike Deff says it's not the best, but it's definitely great for those with a family subscription. It was really the way that I could like loan games to my wife without making her console my primary console, which meant I couldn't use my Switch outside of the house, because I do use my Switch when I'm traveling. I play it on the plane and things like that, where I have no internet connection. I want access to all my digital games, so I don't want to lose that being my primary console. But what I would be able to do is if I had a Switch or a Switch 2 and I'm like, oh, this time I'm going to take the Switch somewhere, or this time I'm going to take the Switch 2 somewhere. Now, on a game-by-game basis, I can determine which Switch is the primary console. Can I play this game offline? So it's more of a, they're expecting people to have multiple Switch consoles that are theirs and not necessarily shared with family members. And that's the problem they're trying to solve here. And ZenMonkey11 says, so this only works with Switches you own, no lending to outside account. Correct. This is literally just for you and your family. And they are trying to find a way to fix the horrible idea of locking your digital game to a single system. So, yes. And essentially, it's not locked. It's only locked to a single system today if you are not connected to the internet. If you have two Switches and you have your account and you are logged into your account on both Switches, and you are connected to the internet, you can play your digital games on both Switches. You can even play them at the same time if you wanted. So that is already there. But that requires an active internet connection because the second console needs to verify that you have the license for it. And so this kind of eliminates that check because you say, oh, this game I play on my docked system all the time. I want it to be on my docked system. This game, I really only play handheld. So I'm going to put it on the console that I have handheld, and then I can play it wherever. And as Jeremy Matt says, it's nice that they won't delete saves after the 14-day trial ends. I doubt they're even going to delete the software. I think you're just not going to have access to the software. I don't know if you've noticed. They already kind of have this a little bit. If you open up, like, let's say the Nintendo Switch Online, the Nintendo, like the NES and the SNES and stuff like that, once every like 3 months, you will see a pop-up that says checking your license for this game. And what they're doing is they're checking to see if you still pay for Nintendo Switch Online. And what sucks is when there's a timer that they don't expose to you. And if you happen to be traveling and that check comes up and you don't have an internet connection, you lose access to the Nintendo Switch Online stuff, the NES and SNES. Ask me how I know this. Even if you used it and pinged it online and played it online 2 days earlier, there comes a point where it's like, nope, we got to check like every, I don't know if it's 30, 60, 90 days or whatever. So they already kind of do that, and then they lock your access out if it can't verify at that time that you have an active Nintendo Switch online. So an Orange Wright says, I always have to remember to use my NSO apps if I want to play them on a car trip. And that's the thing that I learned, is that even doing that, there is still a finite time. It's kind of like if you're a web developer, there's an expiration date on the cookie. And once that expiration date, it doesn't recheck until the end of that expiration date. And then it has to recheck, even if you just used the software online the day before. Trust me. Ask me how I know. Because I lost access to them while on a cruise. Anyway, or you could just have your phone and you can, tether the, put a hotspot on your phone and tether your switch to it just to get the license renewed and stuff. But yeah, so they already kind of do this a little bit. They've got a little bit of the DRM, and this is just making it so it solves a problem that some people have, but it doesn't solve a problem everybody has, and it doesn't introduce anything really new. And it even makes the process a little bit more convoluted, because even then, I'm kind of sure I'm missing something. And there's probably like, I don't understand how this works. Now, if you don't care about this new method, the old version does work. Patrick Klepek, Crossplay, says, Nintendo says, navigating to user settings, online license settings, and turning the setting to on, you can instead to opt to connect to the internet to start up software, which is the way it works today. So that is the old system. They're not taking it away. The Nintendo spokesperson said, quote, we think many people will enjoy the benefits of a virtual game card, but it is an optional feature and the original method can be used instead, unquote. So that is a Nintendo spokesperson. And also, Nintendo also hasn't said if this is all games or if this is like a publisher, like if the publisher has to opt in for this. Patrick Klepek actually asked directly, and Nintendo didn't answer. The Nintendo's answer to, will this be all digital games, or is this on a case-by-case basis by publisher? And Nintendo said, quote, virtual game card provides a new and easy way to play digital games across multiple Nintendo Switch systems and the ability to loan them to Nintendo account family plan members, unquote. Did not answer the question. Thank you very much, Nintendo. So that is the thing. Like, I don't know. Can I share Murder by Numbers with my wife when this comes out, because Playtronic doesn't exist anymore? So they can't opt into this. I don't know. Or is this any digital content that you have purchased, no matter what? We don't know, and Nintendo does not answer that question. They didn't say yes, and they didn't say no. They said, this is great. And we're like, what do you mean? Like, what does it smell like? It is green. That's not what I asked. So anyway, clear as mud, and it's going to be interesting to see if it is something that a lot of people embrace, or if they just go back to the old way, or if it just confuses more people, because it is a little bit of confusion out there about it. And there are also people that wish it did a lot more than it did, because Steam family sharing is a thing, and a lot of people like that a lot better. But Nintendo didn't want to go all the way down that route. So a little bit of good news with some caveats, but a little bit of good news that I want to talk about, we've had a lot of layoffs in the industry and a lot of things shutting down, especially in the gaming media space, where it's more influencers and less more traditional media. Well, one piece of traditional media actually is coming back. The Verge reports that Game Informer is back, and so is its entire staff. On Tuesday, Editor-in-Chief Matt Miller announced that Gunzilla Games has acquired the rights to the gaming magazine, helping to bring its site and archives back online. GameStop, which previously owned Game Informer, shut down the beloved magazine last August and laid off the entire staff after a more than 30-year run. The team teased a comeback last week and has already published a series of new reviews for titles released during the magazine's hiatus, along with a belated list of the best games of 2024. Its owner, new owners, Gunzilla Games, is a game developer based in Europe that's currently working on a battle royale title called Off the Grid. One thing this doesn't mention is that Gunzilla Games was created to make NFT and blockchain games. That was its whole thing. It was its crypto bros, basically. However, NFTs and crypto kind of have fallen on the wayside, and, you know, they're kind of quietly walking that back. But this is crypto bro money that's running this. Doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be a bad thing, but that is where it came from. Miller says that the magazine will continue operating as an independent editorial outlet under a new entity called Game Informer, Inc. He says, quote, our intent is to continue to focus on highlighting the coolest games, celebrating the history and legacy of the gaming industry, and shining a spotlight on the creators and players who are charting its future, unquote. In addition to bringing back its website, Game Informer plans to resurrect its print magazine, too, with new membership and subscription benefits. Though Game Informer currently isn't offering a subscription just yet, you can sign up for an account on its website to receive updates, as well as gain access to the magazine's archive. Game Informer will continue updating its site with news, reviews, previews, features, event coverage, and more starting that day. So, A, it's crypto bros that own it, but that's not necessarily mean doom and gloom. But B, there was another part of Game Informer that was absolutely not mentioned at all by anybody. They didn't even touch on it. They didn't even mention it. They didn't, and it's, and I think it's because it's not part of this, and I think it's because they can't. Game Informer had a legendary vault. The Game Informer vault had basically every game. Like, it probably rivaled Video Game History Foundation's stuff. And there were a lot of amazing things in that Game Informer vault. When GameStop shut it down, there was a lot of talk of what did they do with the vault? Like, what happens to the vault? And I said at the time, GameStop isn't in the business of preserving things, it's in the business of selling things. And there were even things like I would see on TikTok or videos of people that go to GameStop stores and they're seeing like these like really one-of-a-kind things just sitting at GameStop for sale. And I theorized it was because it was from the Game Informer vault, and GameStop's like, well, throw it in a store. Let's sell it to some, you know, put it in a store, sell it. You know, even if it's like a one-of-a-kind thing, because GameStop doesn't know the history. They laid off everybody that knew the history. And I noticed the Game Informer vault is not part of this. It is just the magazine, which is all the back issues of the magazine. Now, I don't know if they've got the physical copy of the magazine because that was in the vault. But this is just the magazine and the staff, which is great. But I think the Game Informer vault's not included in this because I don't think it exists anymore, because I think GameStop just sent all that stuff to stores. That's really sad to me. That is the part that I mourned most about Game Informer, was the loss of the history, because I knew GameStop wasn't going to preserve that history. They were going to sell it because that's what they do. That's their primary goal, is to sell things. And the Game Informer vault had this treasure trove of things that people would be willing to buy. And I don't think it's part of this sale. Nobody has said anything about it. Nobody's mentioned the Game Informer vault, which is understandable, because people getting their job, the entire staff getting their jobs back, is amazing, and that is something we should absolutely applaud and celebrate and, you know, support. But I'm kind of sad that we lost the vault, and that nobody's talking about the vault. It's like everybody forgot that the vault existed because us mere mortals couldn't actually access it. And you know, we know it didn't go to like the Video Game History Foundation or any of the other museums out there. And I believe it went to the stores. I believe they sent, like, because somebody's like, there's this like one of a kind statue from, you know, an E3 in the mid 2000s or something, and it's just sitting in a GameStop. And I'm like, I bet it came from the Game Informer vault. Like, I actually saw TikToks like that. I'm like, yeah, I bet that came from the Game Informer vault, and they're just, you know, putting it in the store to sell it. So welcome back, Game Informer. Hopefully some part of the fault still exists and, you know, maybe can be transferred, but I don't think GameStop's interested in selling that when they can just sell it in the stores to you and me. A company that is doing a good job of preserving things that we really didn't know about until GDC. So this was a talk at Game Developer Conference. This is only making the rounds now because Game Developer Conference talks really usually don't interest the end consumer all that much. So it's not really a big media thing. So that's why sometimes a couple weeks later we'll be like, oh, there was this really interesting talk about this. Games Radar reports that during a talk at the Games Developer Conference, Sony detailed the PlayStation Studios Vault, a massive game preservation effort comprising hundreds of millions of files going back more than 30 years, all stored in a mineshaft of data tapes that not even the company's executives have access to. Does Channel 64 SMP have access to them? That's what I want to know. Can Loki get into them with his minecrafting? Senior build engineer Garrett Fredley explained during the talk, quote, PlayStation Studios Vault is our solution for bringing all of PlayStation's rich 30-year history together in one place. Not just backups, not just source code and source art, but everything that was ever related to a project we can possibly find, from documentation to audio assets and prototype information, anything under the sun, unquote. So for many players, game preservation simply means keeping old games playable for consumers on new hardware. But for historians and studios doing this kind of work, it's much more about preserving the behind-the-scenes development work that tells the story of a game's creation and its place in history. It can help in the quest to make old games accessible to modern players too, since access to old assets can help devs create remasters for remakes more easily, but that's not the main goal. Because remember, we love our remasters. The consumers have spoken. We love our remasters. And Square Enix threw away everything they had about Kingdom Hearts. So all we had of Kingdom Hearts 1 was the game that shipped on PlayStation 2. That's all they had. Square Enix didn't keep any of the source code. They didn't keep any of the source art or anything like that. So they basically had to reverse engineer from the retail copy. And that's why it took so long to make that first remaster, because they basically rebuilt the entire game from hand without the source code, without the source assets, without any of that. They probably got the audio and were able to clean it up from the retail version, but it's still like the compressed audio because Haley Joel Osment is not as young as he was when he originally voiced Sora in the 90s when they were making the game. I know it came out in the 2000s, but I think a lot of the work was done in the late 90s. So this helps do that for future generations if they so choose. The preservation team operates a pair of staging vaults, one in Las Vegas and the other in Liverpool, with fast SSD storage where developers can quickly and easily upload their files for preservation. The team then transfers that data to the actual PlayStation Studios vault, which is a cold storage solution where everything is stored on data tapes. So big tapes. Magnetic tapes. Finley explained, quote, all 30 years of history reside in our tape backups. And yes, for anyone in the room who knows anything about tape backups, you probably just shivered. We still use them, unfortunately. They'll never go away, unquote. And they are all stored in a mineshaft somewhere. Finley says, quote, that's not a joke. They go into a mineshaft somewhere, so you can imagine how long it takes to get them back, unquote. The vault itself is pretty secretive, says, quote, the only people at PlayStation that have access to this material are the IP preservation team and a few members of IT who help manage the infrastructure. That's it. Just because you're an executive doesn't mean you have access to the material, unquote. If a developer needs access to the material, they have to get it through the preservation team. So there is a kind of a cold storage area that has like a lot of like DNA stuff for like plants and stuff. And it's up like in the Arctic Circle. And I've seen things. And if I remember what it was called, I could like pull up a picture. Cause like I can see the picture in my head of like the entrance of this thing. And it's like literally in the ice and it's all stored underground there. And that's like where they're storing a whole bunch of stuff, like plants and DNA and seeds and things like that. So it's a very expensive bunker somewhere up in the Arctic Circle. And it's probably a place like that. Somewhere, you know, up in the north part of Greenland or something there where it's very remote. It's very difficult to get into. It's very difficult to access. And it's safe from outside forces. quote, the oldest material we currently have in our vault right now is an Ark the Lad build, time-stamped 1994, unquote. So that's how far back this goes, is an early build of Ark the Lad. New material is constantly being added. So every PS5 build ever produced by PlayStation Studios that the consumer has seen, on top of every milestone release of every one of those titles, unquote, comprising alphas, betas, debug, and test builds, all told, there are some 200 million files. So there was a question, might it go public someday? You know, the Video Game History Foundation wants to make their stuff public. They've done a lot of that when the copyright on all the materials go out, and unfortunately not. Fridley said in a Q&A after the panel, quote, it's probably always going to remain an internal service and internal material. And ultimately, it's not up to us to decide. We help preserve stuff. We don't decide what happens to it, unquote. So this is not a museum for consumers. This is not for researchers and historians. This is Sony preserving their own history for themselves and what they're going into to preserve it for themselves. So anything can happen in the future. You know, the contents of this could be at some point donated to a museum or sold to a museum or something like that. But right now, this is an internal tool, internal preservation for internal PlayStation. Questbuster says, it was really neat to hear Sony was doing this. There's a huge salt mine in Kansas that also has parts of itself dedicated to preserving things ranging from movie props and government records. And the reason it's like a mine shaft, the reason they do that is because when you're underground, the temperature is controlled just by geology. So when you are far enough underground, if the temperature there is, you know, in the 60s Fahrenheit, it's always going to be in the 60s Fahrenheit. No matter what happens up top, no matter what happens on the surface, it's always going to be that. It is essentially a regulated temperature, and you have all that rock on all sides being a protective source, protecting everything that's inside of it. And so that's why it's going into literal mine shafts. So that's why they do that. That's why it's there, and it's secretive, because honestly, no company wants you to know where their data centers are. Where they're storing things. No company wants that. That's why I always shudder every time our local newspaper blows the lid off of a massive data center that is being built in Metro Atlanta. That was actually a big thing that our local newspaper here in Atlanta they found, and they basically like did like a big investigative report and all this stuff to find a massive Google data center. And this was like 10 years ago or something. And Google was not happy because they don't want people knowing where their data centers are, because there are people who have bad intentions. And so they do the security through obscurity stuff, but you know, they don't want you knowing where their data center is. And the paper was really upset because they were trying to like corner people in the parking lot and nobody was commenting. And there's no signs outside saying what it is. And they're like, we want to highlight the fact that Google has a huge data center here and this is great for our economy. And Google's like, we're trying to not draw attention to where like the core of our business is stored. And even when I've worked like, and when I've had a data center, there was a job I had a while ago where we actually had what's called a co-location facility. So it's a data center, and my company owned basically a large cabinet. It's called a rack. And we had like 14 computers in this rack, and they look like rack. They don't look like desktops. They were actually like you push them in like a rack and you know, they're called blades. They're literally called server blades, and you put them in, you screw them in and everything. And even that, it was like an unmarked building in an office, nondescript office to park, no signs outside saying it was a data center. You had to have like two ways of two different badges just to get in. You had one badge to get into the lobby, then another badge to get into the part that actually had your servers, because I would have to take a, you know, what's called a crash cart. Fun stuff, huh? That has a keyboard and a monitor, and I would like go and unlock with a different key our the back of our server and plug into the monitor and the keyboard and see what was going on with our servers. But even that, it was like that much security in an unmarked office building with, you know, a law firm in the same building. Like, nobody knew there was a big data center there, but there was. And that's because they try to keep that stuff secret. So obviously they're going to try to keep where these tape archives are secret. And frankly, tape backups work better long term than SSDs because it's magnetic. And as long as they're preserved well, like in a mine shaft, you're not going to get as much data degradation as you will on like an SSD or even a platter hard drive. Sometimes that old technology works. Like, there's a reason nobody's been able to, let's say, convert 60 million lines of COBOL to something more modern in just a couple months. There's a reason we still use COBOL stuff. It's because it is so battle-tested, it's so hardened, and it works, and it doesn't fail. So if you ever hear somebody saying, we're going to convert 60 million lines of COBOL to some current language, current programming language in a couple months, they are going to be walking that statement back in a couple months because it's not going to work because people have tried, trust me. So many people have tried to convert COBOL. There's a reason like a lot of banks still run on old mainframe computers with COBOL because it works. It is battle tested. It's battle hardened. And if AWS goes down, their system doesn't go down. Questmaster says, are missile silos still use floppy disks? You know who else uses floppy disks? Chuck E. Cheese. I mean, I think the last place that used them, it was last year they got rid of them. But yeah, to update the Chuck E. Cheese stuff, it was still floppy disks. There was a whole like thing on TikTok, I believe. Somebody was like, I'm loading the new program, and it comes on these floppy disks right here. Rob Roberts says, I live very close to the Final Fantasy XIV data center, which apparently was the Twitter data center at one time before the infamous stuff that's happened now. It is unmarked, but the big-ass fence surrounding parts gives it away. And Questress says, backup tapes may be old school and bulky, but they're still reliable. Yeah, old but gold is what Questbuster says. So there's a lot of stuff like that. You'll find it all around, and it's like, if it's not broke, why fix it? Tiger Claw says, but what about noise? Data centers are very loud. Who cares? You're not in there. Like, you're right. Data centers are very loud and they're also very cold because they're always on raised platforms that blows air conditioning up into the servers. But you're literally only in there if you absolutely positively have to be. Nobody spends time in the data center physically. The only time you spend time in a data center physically is if there is a physical failure and you need to figure out what it is. Everything else, you're remoting into the system. Nobody cares how loud it is. And it is so enclosed that it's not like people outside can hear the data center. Yeah, and that's where I'm at, who's probably spent some time in data centers as well. Loud and cold, you're in there for a few minutes, nobody hangs out in the data center. Yeah, I never wanted to hang out in the data center. So we are going to take a quick music break, and then we will talk to Rob and see what's going on over there and celebrate the fact that we have 573 followers here on Twitch. 573. If you know, you know. You're participating with the Bobby Blackwell Show. You're in the Voice of Geeks Network at twitch.tv/VogNetwork.
Come join us in the AI revolution, or continue playing games on easy mode with Bobby Black Wolf. The choice is yours.
AI. I actually forgot to put a bumper in, so I'm like, oh crap, the song ends in 10 seconds. Let me put a bumper in. That was the one I picked. Anyway, thank you so much for that bumper. It was not using AI. It was using deterministic automation, which I am fine with. It's the non-deterministic stuff. That's what generative AI is that I have an issue with. And a lot of people have an issue with. Anyway, so if you want to leave a bumper, contact me on our Discord server, vognetwork.com/Discord, and that is where you will be able to send me a voice, something with just your voice. I'll choose which DMCA violation to put behind it, or a video with just your voice, so I can once again choose the DMCA violation behind it about coming back to the Bobby Black Wolf show. Esther and Matt, we were continuing talking about data centers, and says there was a crazy moment when the air conditioning unit that cools our data center died, so they had to cut the display glass because it literally just became a hot box. So they ran out and got box fans to try to keep the system from emergency shutting down. The heat from the data center was so hot without anything cooling it that it shot the room temperature up to 85 degrees. That is a real thing. And I think Tackerclaw was asking about the noise. Depends on the size of the data center. Like, I didn't have to... when I worked and had servers in a data center for many, many years. And I never had to wear ear protection. But also, the data center I was in was not that large. And so it was real. And it wasn't the computer fans. It was the AC was the largest thing. But it wasn't so loud. It wasn't like a jet engine, but it was louder than it was in the lobby where I actually would do most of my work if I could at least remote in from the lobby and then just go into the actual data center if I needed to do something with a cable, like change out a network cable or something. It's not as bad as people think. And there's a couple of us in chat who've worked in data centers before and kind of know what's sensationalized and what's not. Coming up next here on the Voice Geeks Network at twitch.tv/VogNetwork is Orange Lounge Radio. Three people out in Sacramento, California. They talk about games for much, much longer than I do. And they will actually pontificate about the Switch 2 and what we're going to see for this last week, the final week that we can even rumor about the Switch 2, because we will know absolutely everything about the Switch 2. Sacramento, are you there?
I am here, Bobby, and I hope the sarcasm is coming through in your comments. Yes. There.
We're going to know everything there is to know about the Switch 2 on April 2nd. There will be no more speculation about anything.
Considering we can barely explain this virtual cartridge trading thing, I think not. And who knows, maybe more to come with that trading thing in the future. Maybe it's the start of something. Because I was just thinking, how cool would that be if that maybe instead of being on a family share plan was open to your Nintendo friend list? Mm-hmm. And I'm totally fine with the restriction to having to do it in person. You shouldn't be able to trade the games across the internet. We all know that's going to lead to these Reddit systems and things that are wild. But like, you know, how awesome would it be if I was getting together, you know, even if I do. And I'm one of those people that, Bobby, that plays docked with my Switch 98% of the time. But the 2% that I take my Switch to go over to a friend's house to play Mario Kart or do some type of gaming party or something, how cool would that be to be like, oh, you've been wanting to play Balatro? Here, I'll loan it to you for... they could even reduce it to 7 days. I don't care. I still think that would be such a cool thing and really add to, you know, the allure of having digital media. Why do people want physical media? They want to be able to loan it out. Could be one of many reasons to have that. But I just be so cool. And ironically, now we're coming full circle with some of the things that the Xbox One had pitched a little bit ahead of its time. But let's not forget, there was also that key thing about the disc not really being a disc. And that was a whole messy thing. But the really cool thing about what Xbox was pitching was that type of thing, was being able to lend out your digital gaming library. And now that we're, 10 years past that, something like that would make a lot more sense, I think, now, especially with potential tariffs on physical media and, you know, more and more people just adopting generally digital media.
Yeah. And the reason I bought a lot of games physically on Switch was so I could hand the card to my wife.
That's it.
And originally, like, and what we wound up doing, we did double dip on Animal Crossing because of the time, because of when Animal Crossing came out and all that. And I bought it physically. But we couldn't play it at the same time. So she wound up buying it digitally herself. So I had the physical game card. She had it digitally.
And let's be real, for something like Animal Crossing, 14 days isn't going to be enough, especially when you have to eject the game from your personal console. So on a game like that, you know, which is ironic because I think about using this. Alan and I don't even have a family plan. He doesn't need Nintendo Online. There is very little. The only game he played was Animal Crossing, and he didn't really go online with it. So, or I think maybe he had the basic one for like a couple months, but he doesn't have it anymore. And so, you know, I feel like there's very little here for me. I mean, if Alan suddenly decided he wanted to do Switch gaming again, maybe. But otherwise, he's very much a PC gamer and, you know, everything that Steam allows.
And frankly, as long as he's on the same internet, you know, you could have shared between two different systems anyway, or if you only had one console.
And there's also nothing else he wants to play anyway.
Right, exactly. Like, and my wife, she plays Disney Dreamlight Valley, and that's it. Like, that's her thing right now. But she's interested in some of these other stuff, but it was not the physical games I bought. It was the digital games, and like this, so this does solve a solve a use case for me, because we are actually following the right thing that Nintendo wants us to do, and they had to. It's all local connection, and for the 14 days, because they know that people have the family plan, and they have 8 members of their family, and you know they don't define what family means, and they're all over the world.
And this will go a long way for 2 parents and 2 kid type of households. Yes. Like, it'll be a really cool thing. So I just maybe I'm wishfully thinking maybe this will be the first step in what could be like a much, much cooler destination. But I'm not going to hold my breath. As 15 had put it in chat, you know, 30 minutes ago when you were first talking about it, this is Nintendo we're talking about.
Yeah.
But it's still a neat kind of direction to see for digital games.
Yeah. So Sony is preserving things, and that's, you know, it's, I'm of two minds of it, because like, it's cool they're preserving things, but they're also still hiding it from the public. Like, it's not a public preservation. What are your thoughts on that? Like, they're using it for internal stuff and they're preserving it internally, but it's like, it's just going to sit in a vault somewhere.
Well, remember that story about, gosh, what was the game that they had lost the original source for? It was Kingdom Hearts.
Yeah.
They lost all the original stuff for it, so they had to pretty much remake it when they did the HD versions. That is Sony's motivation for this whole thing, is realizing down the line they're going to want to do PlayStation 6 and 7 versions of the games they have now, and they don't want to lose anything, because you never know what games are going to be clamoring for a comeback. So don't, I would say the allure that this is some type of forward-thinking game preservation thing is a little bit of a misdirect, I think. I think this is really about preserving Sony's capability to crank out the HD, Super HD, Ultra Super Mega HD, whatever the future brings us, types of remasters in the future by having access to the original assets, which... I please understand, I am choking myself as I say it, but which can be easily AI upscaled in the future.
Yep.
As long as it's Sony's proprietary type of system, cool. Yeah. You know, but if it's the Ghiblification, barf.
Yeah. The Last of Us 8K will be so much easier to make with this preservation system.
That's probably the goal.
So what else are you going to be talking about on OLR tonight?
Well, how about with the Nintendo Direct, we got a new Nintendo app, which brought us information about a highly anticipated Nintendo movie. So we'll talk a little bit about that news and, you know, what that could mean. And then we'll also talk about Ubisoft and some things going on over there, especially with one of their biggest franchises, and just, I guess, ways to shift the money around that a lot of companies seem to be doing this week.
All right.
Hide the money. Hide the money.
Yep.
Hide the money, Bobby.
Hide it. Hide it. And replace 60 million lines of COBOL in just a couple months.
That's right. Bury half in the backyard and half in a Swedish backyard.
Yep. All right. Orange Lounge Radio is up next. Thanks so much, Rob.
Thanks as always, Bobby.
So that is it for me. I will be back next Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, right here at the Voice Geeks Network Twitch channel, twitch.tv/VogNetwork. Come join us and interact with the show directly, or you can join us on our Discord server, VogNetwork.com/Discord, and that is where you can suggest things that you want us to talk about here on the show, like the one about the PlayStation Vault that was posted in the Bobby Blackwell Show Discord chat channel. It's not, we don't ping people. I don't think we've ever done an at everywhere, everyone, so we don't ping you. And come join us. It's a nice, chill place. If you like the show, tell a friend. If you hate the show, tell an enemy. I don't care. Just tell someone the show is not for everybody, but it may be for somebody who does not know about it yet, but we would not be able to make all this work without the help of the chatters who go above and beyond. Last week, we had 2 hype trains, so I can understand that, like, people have, you know, they've supported us for this month. Thank you so much for that. That really does help. We did all our taxes and everything, so thank you so much for that. But thank you for Fifth Dream for resubscribing tonight. Thank you for doing that. But just because you did it before the show doesn't mean I didn't see it. I actually did see it. I was already in chat before we started streaming, and I saw that. So thank you so much for your support, Fifth Dream. That is it for me. I'm going to hit this button to get out of here on time. It's like actually like 9 p.m. Like, I didn't go over. OL Army, you're welcome. And I'll see you next week. Hide the money. Bye.
A winner is you.
The views and opinions expressed are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and are not necessarily the opinions of
the VOG Network, people who need to hire new voiceover guys,
or your mom, although if Bobby said it, it really should be. This has been a production of Bobby Blackwolf Studios.